We are lucky to sit down today with musician, podcaster, writer, activist, and anarchist David Rovix to talk about the Portland Emergency Eviction Response, an important direct action happening in the city of Portland, Oregon. Welcome, David, and thank you so much for joining me virtually today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
So can you first talk a little bit about your organization, Artists for Rent Control, and maybe briefly explain what you mean by rent control?
Artists for Rent Control is really just a loose-knit network of artists who, actually in multiple countries, who share in common the belief that housing is a human right, and that human right is far from being recognized as a human right in the United States. And that's so especially the case since the financial crisis in 2008, and since the cost of housing in cities like Portland has doubled and tripled. You know, in the case of my own family, our apartment has more than doubled the cost of rent in this city over the course of 13 years. And I know that that is actually quite typical. And for many people, it's been far worse. And that's true in, you know, in many cities and communities across the U.S. And so basically, that's how we just started as a network of people to talk about this this crisis, which is a crisis for artists in many ways, particularly because for many of us, it's already the modern economy is already a crisis. You know, for musicians who no longer can sell CDs, that's already a crisis. You know, and then add to that the rent doubling, and you know, it's an extra crisis for many people. So that was how we kind of got started. And then the idea of an eviction response team, I mean, the moment when Portland City Council and the Multnomah County commissioners suspended evictions in Portland and Multnomah County, it was the moment that I felt like, well, this is the time to start organizing to prevent the wave of evictions that is surely going to come down the road when the rent ultimately comes due for so many people that are now unable to pay it, especially because it's so much higher than this is the most rent burdened city in the United States, last I checked. So, you know, it's in terms of the how high the rent is in relation to the income of the average resident of the city. So it was already way too high for most people in this city. And now it's going to be, you know, much, much too high for many renters.
So true. And rent burdened, meaning people who are spending more than 30% of their household income.
Yeah, I think the amount of rent burden is, I guess the concept is basically just how much, what percentage of your income is rent. And the higher it is, the more rent burden you have. And I'm not sure exactly what the threshold is, but I think you're right. That's depending on who you ask, that's probably about right. But I think for many people, it's way more than 30%, you know, it's more like 70% for a heck of a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. So true. I saw online that in April you wrote an open letter to your landlord about why you won't be paying rent. Can you talk to us a little bit about that letter and what led you to write it?
Well, I had already written 20 different letters along those lines and really songs about my landlord as well. Before I ever even knew who my landlord was, I avoided looking into it. I avoided kind of facing these things in a kind of a personal way, you know, but until it became so impossible to ignore. I wanted to write something that was a little more eloquent than the usual sort of I won't be paying the rent this month because of the pandemic, which has caused me to become unemployed because I'm a touring musician, you know. And that was, of course, the guidelines that the city and the county was putting out is write a letter to your landlord along those lines. And I just thought I would write something that covers a little more ground in terms of the situation and why I wasn't going to be, why we weren't going to be paying the rent. But really, I mean, it's like all this time that we've been living here and all the time I've lived anywhere, it's not like you ever have a choice about how much the landlord raises the rent unless you have some kind of law on your side, like real rent control. But we haven't had real rent control in really anywhere in this country in a very long time. And that's by design. The big landlord corporations, like the one that I that owns the building we live in, the Randall Group here in Portland, and other corporations, similar corporations, Prime Group, Multifamily Northwest. These entities have been lobbying the state legislatures here in Oregon and throughout the country to defeat rent control legislation. So they have created the situation that we live in today. So I wanted to try to just describe the background a little bit in terms of why the situation is the way it is, and that I recognize this is the case, and that it's not like paying the rent is some kind of inevitability. It's only inevitable because the landlords have the power of sending armed police to your residence to physically force you to leave. It's forced eviction. This is ultimately why everybody who pays the rent pays the rent. You know, if they have, especially if they are conscious of the fact that their landlords are corporations that are governing only on behalf of their investors to get as squeeze as much out of the renters as they possibly can, just the same corporations are currently liquidating the forests of this state, you know, without even paying any tax money to the people of this state as they cut the forests of the private forest land in Oregon faster than has been cut in decades. You know, it's the same phenomenon that these corporations, they're just run by, you know, they're run by management companies, but they are they're answerable to investors, who have no, I mean, it's just so removed from any kind of sane situation, with these corporations, these banks that we have bailed out, you know, that now own the buildings we live in and have doubled the rent. You know, it's just a very surreal situation that we find ourselves in this country. And that was the case before the pandemic, but suddenly with the pandemic and with so many people losing income, you know, drastically, you know, it's suddenly a really different situation now.
Absolutely. Yeah, COVID-19 has exacerbated so many problems that we were already facing in our society.
And exactly.
Yeah. Did you receive a response to that letter?
Interestingly, I mean, following the pattern that these kinds of corporations tend to follow, which is to pretend that people like me don't exist. Like they generally, the reaction of, from my understanding of how these corporations tend to behave historically and currently, they don't usually give responses, you know, to anything like that, that indicates they really read what you wrote. But what I did get was, what they do is they send a receipt every month telling us what we owe them for the non-payment of last month's rent. And what they did after 3 months of sending a receipt at the beginning of every month telling us that we owed this, and then we owed double and then triple every month, the last receipt also said, if you were one of the people who, I can't remember the wording, but it was like, if we raise the rent on you, basically, they didn't put it that way, but they had a euphemism for that. But they said, basically, if we raise the rent on you this year, that rent increase is canceled. So they didn't even say whether they knew or not that they had raised the rent on me. That's how impersonal it was, you know. But they said, if they did, which they did on March 25th, weeks into the lockdown in Oregon, and months into the pandemic, they raised the rent just as they've been doing every year for, like, as I think every year since I've been in Portland, 13 years now. They raised it again, and so they that was the response so far, was they canceled the rent increase. But my letter was saying they should drastically lower the rent, and I suggested about 50% of what we're paying now, which would be quite a bit more than we were paying when we moved in 13 years ago, would be reasonable.
Yeah, completely impersonal response.
Yeah.
All right, can you tell us a little bit about Portland Emergency Eviction Response?
It's very much just getting off the ground right now, but what we've got set up is basically a secure website where people can share their phone numbers with us. No other information is necessary. It's just phone numbers, and then they will get text notifications when we hear about an eviction that's taking place. And the basic idea of the response of eviction response, like in this direct action type of eviction response, is just that the eviction should be abolished as a means of resolving anything, just like just along the lines of defunding the police. It's very much the same principle, that this should not be how issues get resolved in society, forcing people at gunpoint to leave their homes. So that's the idea, is to just it's rooted in a lot of history of rent strikes throughout this country and throughout the world, which often follow a certain pattern, which along the lines of when there's some kind of an eviction or other action by the police taking place somewhere, then people have a system of being notified. Traditionally, like in the 1840s, it was a tenant farmer blowing on the tin horn, and then the noise carrying through the hills of upstate New York, in the case of the rent strike in upstate New York in the 1840s. But in other times, it's been a telephone tree or various other ways of getting the word out. But the text, I don't know if we're still calling it a text mob, but the text, the phenomenon of signing up for text messages, I think is a pretty good way to kind of notify people of something that's happening quickly, so that they can hopefully drop everything and come to where the eviction is taking place. And it tends to be the case in many different instances that just a few dozen people showing up to an eviction can drastically change the course of events. And there's no guarantee, it depends on a lot of different circumstances. But that's the idea, is you could call it bearing witness to evictions, but it's also the fact is that observers influence the experiment in many cases. Whether or not people are committing direct action of any kind, or trespassing, or doing anything that the police deem to be illegal, which is also often part of similar kinds of actions. Whether people, in the 1930s, and many people are talking about the 1930s because basically we're in a new depression, as many people are increasingly acknowledging in the mainstream media. In the 1930s, the councils of the unemployed were a powerful force in this society, and also the same kinds of thing as the councils of unemployed in the cities also existed among farmers in the countryside, that were mainly concerned with preventing evictions of people from their apartments and houses and their farms. And the means that they employed often involved, if evictions were carried out, then people's belongings were taken back into their apartments. Whether or not anything like that can necessarily take place here, it's all conjecture, because I think I'm not the organization. I'm not the network. I'm just trying to set up the network and try to at least be able to have some kind of a system in place to be able to respond to local evictions. That's my only not very lofty goal, is to just set up a basic network.
So the emergency eviction response is about direct action. It's about stopping evictions in real time. It's about community coming together. What about landlords? Do you have any demands for any of them if they're out there listening?
Well, I mean, the most of the landlords that we're talking about, they are they're corporate entities. They're investors that employ management companies. So, I mean, I'm not even sure I'm not even sure who they would be or who's listening. Or I mean, we're talking about the lawyers that work for the investment companies. You know, I mean, it's like I'm not even sure who the landlords are when we're talking about, you know, entities like the Randall Group. I mean, I guess originally there's Mr. and Mrs. Randall. I don't know to what degree they're the landlord of this corporate. You know, they are the landlord. You know, I don't know. I mean, I guess there are people that we can connect here, and then of course there's people that own smaller amounts of property who are in all kinds of difficult situations themselves, and they'll be losing their property, and it's going to get bought up more by those big banks. So of course, you know, there's different types of people in different types of situations, whether they own property or not. But the what has driven the incredible increase in the cost of housing has been this sort of uncontrolled, deregulated structure after the financial crisis of these big banks buying up all of this property and buying up all these buildings. So, I mean, it's such a surreal. Anyway, yeah, if they're listening, if somebody's listening, capitalism has gone completely out of control, and this was before the pandemic. Your lobbyists are destroying this country. Your lobbyists have caused such a degree of corruption in the state legislatures across this country that they're not even capable, it seems, of governing on behalf of renters or other members of the working class. And ultimately, societies that become this stratified and this unstable fall apart. And that's what's going to happen unless we reverse course and drastically change the relations between the increasingly rich and the increasingly poor in this failed state called the United States.
Just to switch gears, it's been breathtaking to see how defunding and abolishing the police has gone from this fringe radical idea to commonplace. I was wondering if you wanted to speak to that a little bit.
It's been fantastic. And as somebody that is obsessed with history and social movements and how movements happen and how they work and what makes them tick, it's just been amazing to see that all these these basic principles of how ideas can spread and impact so many people and have such a fast widespread impact and change the thinking of so many people. I mean, it's too early to tell what the ultimate how this is going to play out in so many different ways, because obviously there's so many different players involved and so many different forces at work. But it is just fantastic to see this being talked about. But ultimately, I think that when we talk about defunding the police and we talk about the culture of the police, and we talk about the origins of the police, this is all extremely important stuff to talk about, but we also have to understand why it was necessary to have police to maintain these kinds of inequalities, and to talk about the origins of the police outside of the United States and inside of the United States, which had a lot to do as well with suppressing the labor movement and having a constant force that was prepared to defend the sort of property rights of the owners of industry. I mean, the institutionalization of standing armies of police forces coincided with the Industrial Revolution, as I understand it, and that's not a coincidence, at least the widespread institutionalization of standing police forces in this country and in other countries coincided with the Industrial Revolution. It's not a coincidence. I mean, you know, and it's exciting, the idea of defunding the police and of going further with this idea and understanding why they have these armies of police, you know, why the ruling class has these armies of police and what could society be like without them. Because for one thing, when it comes to housing, I mean, you know, it's not police brutality that cleared Portland of more than half of its black population since the beginning of this century. It's gentrification. You know, people need to understand what the police are there for. Ultimately, you know, it's to maintain this totally unequal situation, the situation that they could never maintain otherwise. How could you kick so many people out of a city without the threat of armed force? People wouldn't want to leave. Communities have been destroyed across the city because of this process of gentrification. And I'm not talking about blaming all the people who are moving here. There's all kinds of reasons to move from one place or another. It's the capitalist system, the unregulated system of capitalism that allows the rent to rise 10% a year. It might as well not be rent control. It's ridiculous. It's completely beyond what people actually, you know, the rise in people's wages, which is nil, typically, you know. So it's this very unequal system that the police are here to maintain, and defunding the police is a wonderful idea. But the reason why it's extremely unlikely to happen in any real way is because without armed force, this kind of inequality cannot be maintained.
Very true. Do you have any advice for people who are just now starting to get involved with what we previously termed radical politics?
I mean, I'm so loath to give advice because it's like, you know, don't listen to the old people necessarily, you know, but having said that, my only real advice I think would be seize the moment, because I mean, and this isn't just advice to other people, this is advice to myself too. It's advice to everybody, not just young people, but anybody involved with what's going on right now. Seize the moment, because even if this does continue to grow and become a larger social movement and develop even you know, all kinds of structures of organization that will make it bigger and stronger, even if all that happens, as I hope and actually expect it will, at some point that may stop being the case, and things may not be growing and getting bigger and stronger and more organized. And if it goes on long enough, the growing and the strengthening of the movement, it can be intoxicating and it can feel like you're going to win, but and you may not win, but seize the moment, because it's when the window is opening that you have the best opportunity to open it further.
That's a great advice from someone who doesn't want to give advice.
Thank you.
You're a father. You mentioned you're walking right now with a stroller. How do you raise radical kids?
Oh, I love that question. I mean, there's this brilliant woman named Naomi Aldort who wrote a book called Raising Our Children, Raising Ourselves. And if people are looking for a sort of a blueprint or, you know, a textbook on how to raise radical kids, then, you know, these books do exist, and there's really, really great stuff out there. And books are very useful in a lot of ways. You can really learn a lot from a book. But I think the best way to raise radical kids. I mean, somebody said the best thing I ever did as a parent was give my children my full attention. I don't even remember who said that, but I think that's really good advice. And don't teach them. Just help them, provide them with structure and appreciate them and then let them do their thing. And you don't need to teach them. They model everything from the world around them. And the best thing you can do in terms of any kind of like teaching is modeling and who you are and how you behave and how you interact with other people is what they're going to get out of you.
So lead by example.
Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Where can people find more resources about Rent Strike, about Peer? How can they get involved?
Well, to sign up for text notifications, they just go to artistsforrentcontrol.org and then click on where it says Portland Emergency Eviction Response. And that's in terms of showing up for evictions that I eventually expect to happen. I mean, because this city and the county has done the best job of sort of kicking the can down the road of anywhere in the country, which is really good. It's just that it needs to be pushed further. And if they don't, if real reforms don't happen in terms of canceling rent and hopefully also deferring mortgages, speaking of small landlords, but if that doesn't happen, then there's going to be a wave of evictions and we need to be able to be ready to respond to them. And so that, as far as that goes, as far as plans for direct eviction response, that's what I am trying to set up. But I would very much encourage people to be involved with the Portland Tenants United and other organizations that are representing tenants and to just, there's so many ways that people can be involved. I think actually as much as it is maybe you can say, maybe the internet has its severe limitations, but popular education is really important because people need to be able to imagine how the world can be a different place. Otherwise, we can't, what are we going to do when we defund the police? You know, people have to be able to imagine what can society be like? How will it be structured if, do things have to be this way? If you're poor, do you have to be poor? If you've gone generations without anybody being able to afford to buy a house, does that have to be how it is? And, does there have to be this kind of inequality? How do we overcome things like historic, multi-generational wealth existing in some white families and barely existing at all in black and brown families? You know, these kinds of questions need to be really tackled. And it's easy to say Black Lives Matter, but what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about the extreme inequality in the society, which is so much wrapped up around race and class? You know, you can't just only talk about things like bias and personal growth and police who are members of fascist organizations, which is all a big problem and really serious. But what about the structural problems that continue to perpetuate the terrible schools that exist in so much of this country and the lack of opportunity? We have very little social mobility in this country compared to many other countries. Like, just about any country in Europe has better social mobility than we have here. And that's our this legacy of inequality that is perpetuated through racism and through the, once you already have inequality in so many ways, it becomes very hard to overcome. And actually it tends to perpetuate itself. It tends to get worse in many ways, as we can see with the last financial crisis as well. You know, that that increased the stratification of wealth, the way that the rich dealt with that crisis by buying up assets. And the Great Depression, they did the same thing. And they'll do it again now if we don't stop them.
David, is there anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
Oh, I would just say that social movements can accomplish anything. So if anybody is feeling hopeless, you might have good reason to feel hopeless, but if a movement gets big enough and well-organized enough, it can potentially accomplish anything. And I'm not promising that that's going to happen, but it can happen. And the moment is looking very interesting in a lot of ways.
That's helpful for a lot of us to hear. Well, David, it has been an honor speaking with you today. Thanks so much for sharing your time with us today.
Great talking to you.